T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
WTIC. So I've been inviting city people onto the show who I've always felt I didn't have enough of here, and particularly in the wake of the events of the last few weeks, trying to have more of them on so they can get their voices heard and we can integrate that into our conversation and political perspectives and all. Joining us now, Alfonso McGriff. He is a writer. He is an activist. He is a radio talk host sometimes. He is, did I say author? I think I did. I'm sure I left something out. Businessman. Alfonso, welcome back.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you here. Well, listen, there's a lot going on, and the protests continue and tearing down of statues and all that stuff. So I wanted to get your feelings about things.
About tearing down statues?
Well, whatever. Whatever you want to say about whatever's going on.
Well, I'll say this. I don't have a problem with Confederate statues or any of these statues that represent important white men to white people. Mainly because, especially when it talks, when in reference to Confederate statues and Confederate flags and these kind of things, mainly because in America, as an enslaved African, both sides were enslaving us. The Emancipation Proclamation was written, and it didn't even include those who were enslaved in the Union North. So it didn't really mm-hmm. free anybody. So I see the same thing that went on in the Confederate South with black people going on in the Confederate North. I mean, in the Union North. There was also this place in Natchez, Mississippi, called the Devil's Punch Bowl, where 20,000 free, formerly enslaved people died after being forced into a post-slavery concentration camp. And they mm-hmm. were re-enslaved by Union troops. So if I am going to be upset about Confederate statues and Confederate flags, then I have to spend a lot of energy being angry with the American flag, angry with America, angry with the English language, angry with the name that I carry, angry with the food that I eat, angry with the whole African-American way of life, angry with the political, economic, and educational systems. I have to be angry with the first significant affirmative action document in the history of this country, which is called the Constitution of the United States of America. And that just takes too much negative energy. I have to be angry with all of these things because it all represents to me what is the support and enforcement of the enslavement of African people in America.
Well, that's an interesting perspective. Thank you for sharing it. I like it because my argument has been that it seems to me better if we are going to resolve differences to focus on the differences of today rather than differences of the past. So why not change the course of the road that's being built right now instead of the one that was built 400 years ago or 200 years ago. Like, the one we're riding on right now is more important, is it not? And that's what I'd like to see us focus on. What's wrong right now? Let's fix it. Does that make sense to you? Is that, and does that correlate with what you're saying at all?
That does make sense. But like I said in the last program, the problem that was then remains the same problem today.
Yes, but let's fix it today.
Then how do you fix it? How do you fix racist white people?
I don't think that's the problem. I don't think people's attitudes are the problem. I think it's institutional implementation of things that are not fair and not proper under our system of government and aren't humane. And let's fix those and then see where we go. I'll give you a chance to respond to that in a moment. I just have to give us a little information update here. So does that make any sense, Alfonso? If we can't change anybody's mind, and everybody's mind is filled with all kinds of prejudices, what we have to fix is policy, and let's make good policy.
Who determines the policy?
Well, let's go back to having democratically chosen governments do what they are asked to do.
There are minds and consciousnesses that are determining policy and that are reinforcing so-called unfair practices within systems.
Do you not see this as a moment where the system has been exposed and that this is an opportunity to force it to change in some ways?
I think it's very interesting that you say that, because I can see how you can genuinely believe that. But as a black person growing up in America, in my lifetime, whether you want to talk about the Rodney King situation, the Amadou Diallo situation, the Abner Louima situation, you can name many emotionally transforming situations that took place in this country that seemed to be great times to bring about change. But the people who reinforced the unfair and foul treatment remain in position to sustain things the way they are.
So you are without hope?
No, I have a lot of hope, because life is huge. Life is way bigger than policy and people and so-called racism and anger. Life is huge. And so I have a lot of hope, but I don't put my hope into I can't put my hope into believing that racist white people will change, but I don't put my hope into systems and structures. I put my hope into my ability to assess the reality that I'm in, decide what I want from the reality, and figure out how, based on what I understand about how the reality works, how to make the reality serve my best interests.
Okay, so I was asking a more specific question, although I appreciate your answer, your general answer about your own hopefulness as a human. But you're saying there is no hope in this situation that political change will be affected, because there is too much negative animus on the part of whites towards blacks in America. That's your assessment of the situation.
Right, because not just because of too much negative. What's the word you use? Animus?
Animus. I think that's redundant, actually. I should have just said too much animus, which...
Too much animus. Well, there has never not been the animus. That's the part that doesn't give me hope. You know, I can't name a time when the animus wasn't there. It's kind of like when people say make America great again. I have challenges trying to figure out from my where I stand, when was America great? Like, it may have been great for a certain group of people, but America has never been, quote unquote, great for black people in this country.
Yeah. You know, again, I'm a naive white person who doesn't have direct contact with these issues in daily life. So I'm not sure how much value my opinion has. I suspect not much. But nevertheless, I think a lot of other whites have my perspective. So I'll throw it out there just so you can respond to it. And that is that in the arc of history, as President Obama liked to say, things are improving. And in my perception, in my lifetime, being in my 60s, I can look back and say I can remember a time when white people perhaps had more negative feelings and expressed feelings of racism. And I think to a large extent, on a human level, on an individual level, we have moved a great deal. And that what we're seeing the effects of today is institutionalized racism. That is systems in place that allow certain situations to occur, such as police violence, because police aren't responsive to the people who pay their salaries. Like, to me, that's a very concrete, manageable problem with small shifts in the way people behave. And so I would approach it differently than you and not look at the grandness. I'm not saying my opinion has any weight with you or that it should, but for what it's worth, that's my perspective, is that political change can happen because politicians don't really care about what they do as long as they get to keep power. If a group of blacks that would be a majority vote or would alter an election in Hartford would say to whomever the candidate is, we are not going to vote for you until police unions are gone. And we can know that police as working people can respond to what we say, because we know we've been crying out for change for a long time, and we see that this system you have in place doesn't allow change to happen. I'm very concrete in the way I look at it. Respond to that, please.
I totally 100% absolutely understand you. And I also, it makes sense for the idea of black people organizing and making a decision as it relates to how to use the vote as a strategy and not an objective. But I also have to help you understand that what I might identify as white optimism as it relates to how black people should view things is kind of very similar to when people say, well, there were nice slave masters, and we can't just have a bad look or look at slavery as just all bad because there were white slave masters. And then the question becomes, well, who among you are going to change places with me and then live this existence and have a discussion about how change has come in the system, is possible to change, and these kind of thoughts. And no one, I can't see white people willing to change places with black people with the same optimism that they have. So what you're saying is true, and what the biggest thing that makes sense is, for me, what I say to black people is, rather than run around trying to force racist white people to change their behavior, we need to change ours, and we need to focus and organize and use what is available to us to use to bring about change on our own behalf, based on our own power and our own ability to organize and strategize and make things happen. And part of what you said is exactly what I'm talking about. Make a decision to who we're going to support and make a suggestion of what we'd like to see and hear. And if those people don't support us, then in an organized way, we have to be as willing to go as far as to totally not participate in the process in order to help
people
understand that we are organized and we're willing to make that move.
So on the political side, it's as simple as that. And the other stuff, I think, is as complicated as you make it sound. And you're a fascinating man. I love talking to you. I hope we can. I'm going to be on vacation next week, but the week after, maybe you'll come back and we can continue this conversation.
Sure.
Alfonso McGriff, thank you, sir, for being here. Great to talk with you once again.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.